Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. And Pete, I'm starting you off with, I'm putting you on the spot with a piece of trivia here.
Oh boy.
Do you know what a sesquicentennial is?
Something yearly. I have no idea. No, I don't.
It is the 150th anniversary of something.
Okay. Because
you get your centennials and your bicentennials, but there's a sesquicentennial. This is a word that I only know because my freshman year at Northwestern was the school's sesquicentennial. And it's only relevant because this is our sesquicentennial episode of the Keeper Cup podcast.
Should have got that.
Yeah. Not entirely true, because I think, like you said, it does have to do with years, and we have not been doing this for 150 years. But we have been doing it for 150 episodes, which is is still
staggering.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we talked about this at our 100th too. Like, we've been doing this, you know, mostly weekly during the season, although we missed last week. We missed a couple here and there. We do it mostly every other week in the off season, which means we've got to be getting 4 years. I mean, it's over 3 years, because 150 episodes weekly would be
right,
pushing 3 years. So yeah, the pod has taken on a life of its own. It's still going strong. I'm looking back. Our first episode was February 15th, 2021.
Wow.
So yeah, we are, by spring training this year, we will be into 4 years. We're at 150 episodes now. So congrats to us.
Yeah.
And to you, cheers, listeners, for getting cheers to listen to 150 of these.
I have
anybody who's actually listened to all of them.
So cheers.
Yeah. There you go. I have nothing to drink, sadly.
The historian in me was like, man, what is he talking about? Could it be the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad? Like, nope, that's probably not it. Nope. Talking about the podcast, because we are just on the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. I'm way too selfish to worry about things like railroads being completed. So
totally fair.
That does mean we have to pick a player with jersey number 50. And I think this is going to be one of the easier choices, because as we've talked about the last few episodes, we're starting to get into thinner and thinner numbers. There are a couple of pitchers who pitched literally forever near the top of the number 50 list, and Jamie Moyer and Adam Wainwright. But there's a guy a good 20 WAR ahead of them who I think you're probably a little bit partial to, named Mookie Betts. I really don't see anybody else on this list that I'm like, I don't know, J.R. Richard, he was pretty exciting back in the day, but he predates either of us. Yeah, it's either Moyer, Wainwright, or Betts, and I know which one I'm going to pick, so I assume you're going with Mookie.
Yeah, just going by war, it's not even close. And you know what's sad is, like, the Mookie Betts trade might actually be only the second worst Boston Red Sox trade over the last 5 years now, so which is startling and terrifying. But yeah, definitely the Mookie episode. This is how bad I am with numbers. I love Mookie Betts, worship Mookie Betts, you know, player jersey, autograph, all that stuff. I'm so bad with numbers. When you started this, I was like, oh, who's he talking about? I wonder who number 50 is. And then I went to the baseball reference page, like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, he's pretty good. But yeah, the Mookie Betts episode for sure.
Yeah, I often don't remember jersey numbers. I'm with you. But yeah, Mookie definitely belongs as the representative for this episode. So, and Mookie's a podcaster, so he might listen. He might be out there, you know, doing some
come back
some research. Anyways, we also have to do our head-to-head heroes. Mm. I always want to call this our hometown heroes, because it feels like that's what it should be called. And I know that's wrong, but I'm going to just go with that this week, and I'm going to take a totally Cleveland biased answer, but a deserving one.
Yep.
Deserving one. Joey Cantillo made two starts this week.
Big time.
Across those two starts, 12 innings, 16 strikeouts, one walk, five hits, and one earned run. So that is a whip of 0.5, an ERA of, I don't know, whatever 1 divided by 12 times 9 is, 0.75, I believe. Is that right? 0.75. Yeah, the 16 strikeouts, like, if you're like me and you're in that, you know, a strikeout to walk ratio league, 16-1 is pretty great. And more than a strikeout per inning in both of those starts, his FIP over that stretch is 0.76. And if you're like, yeah, but, you know, 0% home run per fly ball rate, his XFIP is 1.51. Now, one of those games was at the White Sox. And I don't know if you've heard this. I know you're busy with your other Sox, but you may not have heard that the White Sox are not good this year.
I've heard a thing or two.
So if you've missed that, you should be aware that pitching well against the White Sox is not super difficult. The other one is against Tampa, whose offense has also not been very good, although they've been hitting Cleveland pitching the last few days, except for Cantillo yesterday. Mm-hmm. I bring him up because we're going to spend most of this episode talking about young pitchers. Actually, that's not true. We're going to spend most of the episode talking about breakout pitchers. Most of them are young. A lot of them are young, but breakout pitchers. We'll talk about how we define that in a little bit. Cantillo doesn't make the cut. He doesn't make the cut because his last three, he only lasted an inning and two thirds at Kansas City. But that was he came in relief. It was a whole other thing going on. But his last three appearances, including that relief appearance, he's been excellent. The four before that, he was the opposite of excellent. And so his overall season line is bad. His ERA is 4.99. His FIP is 4.67. His XFIP is 3.61. He's had some home run per fly ball bad luck that's hampered him, especially given he has a 48.8% ground ball rate. Like, he gets ground balls. So there was always some he's been a little better than he's looked, but he hasn't been good. And now all of a sudden, since August 26th, that, relief appearance against Kansas City, he's been awesome. Let's see him do it against better offense. Let's, all that. But if he had made the cut for our conversation later, for me, he would be a guy I'd be buying. I will be I think he's going to have a spot in the rotation next year because the Cleveland rotation still has a ton of question marks and he's got a ton of talent. And I'm sort of intrigued by what he can do. So, yeah, Joey, you are both my head-to-head and my hometown hero this week. I greatly appreciate what you have done for the Guardians because that rotation it's been a long time since I've said this as a Guardians fan. That rotation is a mess and they need a guy to step up, and he's doing it. So thank you, Joey.
Yeah, I was going to say it's been a while since we've talked badly about the Cleveland rotation, but no, I love the pick. I think it's a slam dunk pick. I think, with young pitchers and in any pitchers, because there's been so much good pitching this year, at least it's felt that way, even with all the injuries, it feels like pitching has been something that's been pretty easy to find. I think the guys that stand out that I'm most interested in are the guys that get strikeouts. And if you just look at the surface numbers, you see it's basically exactly a strikeout per inning. But like you pointed out, his last two starts, the strikeouts are way up. He was posting 12 strikeouts per nine at AAA. The swing strike rate this year jumped up to over 14% at AAA. Now it's about 12.5 at the major league level. So a guy in a system that churns out pitchers who, showed he's capable of going seven innings, even if, again, it was against the White Sox, and is getting strikeouts, you have to pay attention to it. So I like the pick a lot.
What about you? Who do you got for your head-to-head hero this week?
So I was going to go with Eugenio Suarez because I think he's kind of interesting going into next year. He feels like a guy who is like a lesser version of Marcelo Ozuna going into this year, where it's like nobody wants to care that he's hitting a ton of homers with a ton of RBI. I mean, his numbers this year, for where we thought he was in his career, are absurd. But I'm going to put the pause button there and pivot to also be a hometown hero and go with Tyler O'Neill, who, even though over the last 7 days he's hitting under 200, he does have three homers, which is second in baseball over the last 7 days. And would you believe me if I told you that Tyler O'Neill has a 140 WRC plus this season? And I think he's an interesting player to talk about for long-term formats, not because he's like super young or anything like that, but Roman Anthony's coming up for the Sox. They've got a lot of young outfield talent, it seems, and it really looks like Tyler O'Neill is going to be on his way out. So where he ends up will obviously dictate a lot of his value, but he's actually coming off a quiet, awesome season. After yesterday, he's up to 30 homers with only 59 RBI. I think I read that is the worst home run to RBI ratio in Major League history, like since they were like keeping track, since 1911 or something. 30 homers, 59 RBI. It's incredible. So you can only imagine how much higher he would be on the player rater and all those things if he just had more luck, if the Red Sox could get on base in front of him. And it's especially weird because they actually have a pretty good offense this year, the Sox do, despite being without Cassis and Story all this time.
He's mostly hit Most of his plate appearances have come in the third spot in the lineup. He's also got a decent chunk in fifth. He's hit some fourth, some second. So
really bizarre.
He's got one plate appearance as a leadoff hitter. He's got two in the eighth spot, four in the sixth spot. So, like, you know, those are, I assume, pinch hit appearances. Those aren't, you know, he wasn't starting a game as a leadoff hitter unless Cora lost his mind, which is possible, I guess. But like, he's hitting in the middle of that lineup, which means he's had Duran in front of him. In a lot of cases, he's had Devers in front of him. Abreu at times, I think, has been in that part of the lineup. Like, and those guys are on base. So yeah. it is sort of wild. It almost makes you want to say, like, oh, he can't hit with guys on base, but I don't believe that. So
right. And you know, we think of Tyler O'Neill as always, he's a platoon player. And his numbers against righties are actually worse this year than they've been in the past. But he has 15 homers against lefties, 15 homers against righties. So, like, the power is there no matter, you know, who he's facing. And I do kind of find him interesting for next year. I think oftentimes ADP and pre-rankings can really closely reflect the previous season's player rater. But because of this anomaly where he only has 59 RBI with 30 homers, I think he's going to be overlooked. So he had a good, a fine week, three homers. Anybody would take that this time of the year, despite the batting average. But he's interesting next year, depending on where he ends up.
I want to table this because I want to come back to it in a future episode. But O'Neill is in a similar situation, if you think about keeper leagues and future value, as Matt Wallner, who is also, especially since he came back, had a great year. But those guys make very little contact. They strike out a ton. And if you go back and look at the history of players like that, it's pretty spotty. And O'Neill is part of that history, right? He did this already. Like, he did this, 2019? Which,
it was
that's not right. That's the wrong year.
Whatever 2021. Year
it was the 20. Well, it's not even that different. He had a 143 WRC plus that year. He's at 140 this year. He's basically doing the same thing. He's walking a bit more this year than he did in 2021. He's striking out a little bit more. But the overall production, like 34 home runs in 138 games that year, 30 in 104 games so far this year. Like, it's just not that different. So he's interesting because now he's doing it a second time. And that isn't something that profile does very often, right? Gallo did it for a while. And then really, really didn't do it. But in general, it's like, this is a hard profile to bet on long-term.
Sure.
Because the contact rates are so low, but we're not here to talk about hitters today. So we're not going to go into too much detail on that. It's just a little nugget for people to think about that we should come back to in a future episode when we've got more time to talk hitters, because we want to talk pitchers today. Now for our 100th episode, which was, you know, a while ago, we went on this, like, we're going to get 100 names in. We're going to talk about 100 different players in an episode. And we did it. We did it. I was very proud of us for that. I thought about for a moment being like, Pete, we did 100 names for 100th episode. Let's get 150 names in this episode. I decided that was a terrible idea. I didn't even bother asking you about it. But I have what I did end up proposing, and that we are going to do today, is going to push us to be pretty quick on guys, because we're going to try to get through 21 starting pitchers in the next, I don't know, we've already been going for almost 15 minutes, the next 45 minutes, maybe a little over that, which means we don't have a lot of time on each one. And I mentioned before that Joey Cantillo would not have made the cut for this conversation, despite the fact that I think he is sort of an interesting breakout. So here's what we did. I wanted to identify breakout starting pitchers. I did this by comparing their 2024 Autonew Fangraphs points per innings pitched to their 2023 Autonew Fangraphs points per innings pitched. If you're out there like, but I don't play Autonew, or I play 4x4, or I play 5x5, or whatever, that isn't really super relevant to the conversation here. I just used it because it's an easy way to baseline a pitcher's overall performance from a fantasy perspective. It doesn't obviously include wins if you're in 5x5. It doesn't perfectly tie to like ERA and strikeouts and things like that, but it's pretty close, and it's a pretty good shorthand for being able to identify pitchers who are having a good season, bad season, whatever. So what I did is I took every pitcher who has a points per inning pitched over 4.35 this year, over 4.35 this year, who was under four or didn't pitch last year. There are 21 of those pitchers, and we're going to try to power through them. And Pete, this is the challenge I'm putting in front of us is we have to call at their average odd or new value. We have to call every single one of these pitchers either a buy high or a sell high. I'm not allowing us the cop out of saying, oh, I would rather just hold this guy and see what he does. That's not true. I'll allow us to say it. We can say it, but then we have to come back and be like, but forced to make a decision, forced to put them in one bucket or the other. Are they a buy high or a sell high? In order to fit all 21 of these in, some of them we're gonna power through pretty quickly. Hopefully those will be ones that listeners are like, yeah, I get why you're saying that, because some of these are pretty straightforward. So with that in mind, Pete, are you ready?
I think so.
Just overrunning with confidence here. I might be ready.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see in a minute.
So the first pitcher, whose average, his median salary, let's go with median salary. I like medians better. His median salary in auto new leagues is $11. Last year, he did not pitch. Well, he did pitch, just not in professional baseball. He pitched in college last year. Paul Skeens is at 6.09 points per innings pitched. That's good. And by the way, I am going through these guys in order of best points per innings pitched this year to worst. So not only is that good, that is, of all the breakout pitchers, he's been the breakoutiest of them. Pete, selling high or buying high?
Yep, that's an easy buy high. There's almost nothing to get upset about. The one thing people were concerned about this year when he first got called up was how deep he had gone into outings. It was like four innings basically every time at AAA, I believe. Immediately, that was resolved. He's already up to 120 major league innings this year, and that comes with over 150 strikeouts. He looks like everything that was promised, so he is a buy high.
Serious question, but just because there's not a lot to talk about with Skeens. I agree with you. He's a buy high. Is he in the top? Is he the favorite for the NL Cy Young next year right now?
I mean, I guess I would say yes. I don't. Because with 120 innings at the major league level, who knows how many overall? It's got to be what, around like 150.
Yeah, he should be good for a full season next year.
Exactly, and that's all you can really bank on from anybody, right? I think Chris Sale is just nasty. He's going to run away with the Cy Young Award this year, and he'll probably be great again next year. But I guess he's 37, you know. So, and it's not Stryker like Wheeler should be younger. Yeah, and I expect, you know, Yamamoto is in the conversation, but like, should we actually expect more innings from Skeens? You know, Yamamoto coming off a shoulder injury. He looked amazing his first start back, so maybe not, but I would guess it's Skeens and Yamamoto. And I don't know if anybody will really come close to them. And it's just because of Chris Sale's age.
Yeah.
When I say come speaking close, of I mean Yamamoto, in terms of like odds.
Yeah. Speaking of Yamamoto, 5.92 points per inning pitch for him this year. His median salary is $40. Is he a buy high or is he a sell high?
I don't even know if you can sell high. I'm selling any pitcher at $40, I think. So I think he's awesome, but he's still, you know, 78 total major league innings. I think he's good. So like, maybe that doesn't matter as much, but if I'm going to pay $40 for a pitcher, man, that's got to be like guaranteed ace. And although I think the innings he will give you are ace worthy, I haven't seen enough to commit, you know, a huge 10% of my team to him. It's not happening. Sell high.
Yeah. I'm a little less, it's a little less clear for me on Yamamoto because I think you need ace quality innings. And if you have Skeens, like, you could easily right now have like a cheap Skeens, a cheap Sale, another name on this list, and be like, yeah, I'm good. I can get away without having a $40 pitcher on my roster. If you don't, if Yamamoto is the ace on your roster, if you trade him, you end up having to either trade for someone else to replace those innings, or you have to buy those innings at auction and they're going to cost you as much, if not more, and may not be available. Like a lot of my leagues this year, there wasn't a pitcher you could buy at auction other than Yamamoto, who is possibly going to be in that tier. So I think for me, he's a buy high at $40. Cause I think if you had to pick him up at auction, you'd be paying more than that. I think he'll go for more than that where he's a free agent. And so I think if you need an ace, I am with you. If you feel like your pitching is strong and you can live without him, or you can get ace potential back in a trade, okay. But if you need an ace, I would be happy to buy Yamamoto at $40.
Yeah, I agree with your point that you just need ace quality innings. It is a circumstantial thing. I'm looking at the pitcher in a vacuum for $40, and I'm not in love with that. Especially in part of what's driving that is, you know, the most important time of the year in a head-to-head points league is right now. And so we're talking about a guy who is going to be pitching every 5 days for 6 months next year for the first time in his career. He couldn't do it this year. He didn't hold up. It was literally an arm injury. I don't know if I can bank on him at this time of the year. And that shouldn't dictate how you value a player completely, but it can help split hairs.
Yeah, that's fair. Next pitcher on our list, we're going back to the low end of the price threshold. A $3 median salary for Garrett Crochet. Crochet at 5.59 points per inning pitch this year. I'll go first here and say to me, this is an easy buy. Like he looks like an absolute stud. I get that there's some injury risk given his history, but he's looked perfectly healthy this year. I know that he took some heat for being like, well, I'm not pitching in the postseason without an extension, but I like that he's thinking about his long term and taking care of his arm and stuff like that. That to me is a positive thing. And so I'm happy to hear that with him. And so, yeah, if I could buy a $3 Garrett Crochet, I'm all in.
Yeah, he's definitely a buy at that price. And, you know, I mean, 195 strikeouts in 138 innings is absolutely absurd. And you also have the reality that he is probably, maybe that's too aggressive of a statement for somebody who's not an insider, but probably getting traded this offseason to where like anywhere is going to be an upgrade over the freaking White Sox unless they trade him to the Rockies. I wasn't as big of a fan about the comments. Maybe I'm old school. It kind of bothered me, but you're right. It shows an awareness of his arm. It's an awareness of his long-term sustainability, and that I can appreciate as a fantasy manager. So, yes, at that price, he's what, a top 10 pitcher in drafts next year at worst? Probably up like 7 because of the upside. So, yeah, I'm buying at that price.
All right. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, We're gonna shift gears a little bit, only because we're going from three guys who have been three of the best pitchers in baseball when healthy this year to some, I think, less obvious discussions. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We are going through pitchers who have had a breakout year, have jumped from under 4 points per inning pitch, not our new, to over 4.35. Hopefully these guys are relevant to all formats, even though we're using, you know, auto new specific scoring just to drive the conversation a little bit. We've gone through Paul Skeens, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Garrett Crochet. So far, we've mostly said they were buy highs, although Yamamoto, Pete's willing to sell any pitcher at $40, which I totally get. But now we move into what I think is a little bit of a different tier. Maybe not by actual scoring, but Osvaldo Beto. Now, part of his points per inning pitched situation here is that he hasn't been only a starter, and you get higher points per inning pitched as a reliever. So you got to take his score overall with a grain of salt here. Beto at 5.53 points per inning pitched. He is a $2 median salary. And this is a good example of why I set the, like, we have to call them a buy high or a sell high, and we can't just say hold. Because to me, he's an easy hold. If you've got him for $2, he'll be $4 next year. There's no harm in just being like, whatever, I'll just sit on him and see what happens. But I'm putting you on the spot. You've got to make a decision. You either have to trade for him or trade him away at $2. What are you doing with Osvaldo Beto?
Yeah, I'm trading him. And part of that is like, yeah, you keep him at $2, you're not paying anything. But someone else might view it as like, oh man, you have a $2 Osvaldo Beto. I'm going to pay up for that. You know, he's already 28 years old, going to be 29. I'm not going to hold that against him too much, but what I am going to hold against him is a 3.8% home run to fly ball rate. I don't buy that. Home runs kill you in Fangraphs points. And if he's not also going to put up gouty strikeout numbers, which he's not, I don't trust in a singular season, these exit velocity reduction specialists. Like, I mean, guys have not been able to square him up this year. Average exit velocity against is 85.6 miles an hour. That is in the 98th percentile, which maybe that can be a carrying skill for him. He was pretty good at it last year as well, 80th percentile. But I think that's a tough skill to carry over. And if it doesn't come with strikeouts, I'm out. So if somebody really wants, I'm not going to cut him. But if it's sell high or buy high, I'm selling high on Osvaldo Beto.
Yeah, I agree with that. His XFIP, which would correct that home run per fly ball rate to something more like league average, is 4.63. That's very much in line with what he did in AAA this year. It's very much in line with what he did in the majors last year. Right. Well, and last in the majors last year, he had a similar run of 16 appearances, 9 starts with Pittsburgh. His XFIP was 4.94. His ERA that year was 5.86. In AAA last year, he had a 5.12 XFIP, a 4.16 ERA. This guy has no track record of success. None. And so that at 28, that's a little concerning to me. He also is likely to be pitching in Sacramento next year, which is not the Oakland Coliseum. Now, his home run per fly ball numbers are fine on the road. Like they're very, I shouldn't say fine. They're very similar to what they are at home. They look lower than they should, than you expect them to be going forward. So part of me wanted to be like, at home, he doesn't give up home runs. And on the road, he's terrible because he does give up home runs. And once he's out of Oakland, but like that actually isn't the story here. He is suppressing home runs on the road just as well as he is at home. I just don't buy it. On top of everything else, part of the reason he has such a low home run to fly ball rate is he doesn't get many ground balls. Mm-hmm. He has a 29.6% ground ball rate, which means the ball is in the air all the time, which means that you could give up a decent number of home runs and still have a relatively low home run per fly ball rate because you have so many fly balls. I just think with the ball being in the air that much, I just don't see it. I don't think like he doesn't strike people out. Like I said, he's just totally banking on soft contact. And yeah, I mean, I covered him in an Auto New Hot Right Now article, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And I said, if the hot streak continues through September, I would shop him in December before he moves to a new park. I was sort of saying, basically what I was saying is like, ride the hot streak. Like, as long as he's pitching well, sure. But I would cut him as soon as he's not pitching well. If he continues to be good through the end of the year, then I'm not going to cut him, but I am going to shop him in December. So I agree with you. I think he is a sell high.
His quality. So this run started in July. His quality of opponent is absolutely atrocious. And you could say, all right, well, his first opponent in July was the Dodgers. And he went 6 innings. He did walk 3. Here's that Dodgers lineup. Shohei Ohtani, Teoscar Hernandez. The rest of the lineup? Gavin Lux, Jason Hayward, Enrique Hernandez, Kevin Biggio, Ahmed Rosario, Kevin Kiermaier, and Austin Barnes. That is not your Los Angeles Dodgers. Who did he face after that? Who has he faced since then, since that start on... I'm sorry, this started in August, since August 4th. He has faced the Blue Jays at home, the Giants, the Rays, the Reds, the Mariners, and the Tigers. I have no interest in Osvaldo Beto, and he is a sell high if you can find someone who would buy him.
Makes sense to me. Let's go to our next pitcher. There's a little bit of a similar story here, a little bit. And it's only in the home run per fly ball rate being low. That's Hunter Green. Hunter Green on the year is at 5.52 points per inning pitch. He was just at 3.95 last year. So big jump. $9 average salary, obviously on higher median salary than we've seen from these from like Beto, because Green's been on the radar for a while. Like he broke out this year, but like, we all remember him striking out more than 30% of hitters his first 2 years in the majors. He just was getting tagged for home run after home run. This year, the strikeout rate is actually down, but the home run per fly ball rate is way down. The barrel rate is way down. The hard hit rate is way down. He is keeping guys off balance, it seems, in a way he hasn't before. And so, Pete, buy high or sell high on a $9 Hunter Green?
I mean, if you told me he was healthy, he's one of the easiest buy highs on the list, because I think everything was legit this year. And I think, it's, honestly, if he was healthy, he's a top 10 pitcher. Sell high. I'm sorry. The guy is most known for throwing super hard, and he has an elbow injury. And I know the latest report was that he, quote, feels good. Yeah, nope. Sorry, no interest. I'm not investing, especially if someone is willing to buy high on his season this year, in a guy who throws that hard and has elbow problems. We all know where this is most likely going, right? I mean, are we going to play this game again? Like,
yeah.
Remember the conversations before the season started about all the, I forget who kickstarted, was it maybe Garrett Cole's injury that got us talking about the hardest throwers and how they all end up with Tommy John surgery, and one of the only ones that hadn't yet or whatever was like Hunter Green? Well, here we are.
Right. And I think here's, you know, Green recently threw a live BP session. He said he felt good. That's, I think, probably what you're referring to. That means there's a chance. I don't think it's a very good one, but there's a chance we could see him on a mound, maybe in the minors, just in like a rehab thing this year, which means he's going to go into the offseason with people saying he's healthy. He's back. He was pitching again.
Sell high.
And it sounds so much like a million stories we've heard before of like, yeah, he ended the season fine. He was fine going into spring training, and his first bullpen session of spring training, they're like, his elbow doesn't feel great.
Yep.
And the next thing you know, he's missing the season. Now, I am not projecting that he's going to miss the season. I just think you have to bake that risk in. I think the other thing is, I did mention that home run per fly ball rate, that lowered hard hit rate, that lowered barrel rate. I am not thoroughly convinced that that's all legit yet.
Okay.
It's 143 innings, which is not a small amount, but his overall career line is still 1.28 home runs per nine. That is roughly half, or roughly double what he's done so far this year. I think those home runs are going to come back, and they're going to hurt him from an ERA perspective, from and certainly in Fangraphs points leagues or auto new leagues. I think he ends up as something more like a high threes ERA. I think he has legitimately improved from what he did his first 2 years. His first 2 years, he was so homer prone that this was just like, there was nothing you could do. But I don't buy into all of those home run gains. I think those are going to regress a bit. His strikeout minus walk rate is actually down, because that strikeout rate is down and the walk rate hasn't really moved. And so I think that there's going to be a chunk of regression. And instead of the 2.83 ERA as this year, I think it'll be more like 3.83 next year. Hmm. And so this is another good example of where, if I have a $9 Hunter Green, I probably just want to keep him, because I think he's, the upside is obviously elite. At $9, if he misses a chunk of time, it's not going to kill you. Like, but have to make a choice, buy high or sell high. I'm going to sell high if I can sell high on his current season and him being healthy and things like that, because I think the combination of what I expect to be regression, even if the skills changes are legit, what I expect some regression. If the skills changes aren't legit, that regression is going to be really harsh, and you have some injury risk in there, given he is dealing with an elbow thing right this second. I'm with you. He is a sell high.
Yep, no question about it. And again, I don't want to mislead our listeners. I want to reiterate, I think Hunter Green is freaking awesome. I really do. And maybe at $9, like you just said, Chad, you're like, you know what? I'll risk it. He ends up missing the season. I mean, would you keep Shane McClanahan for $11, right? Because there's going to be $2 in inflation. I probably would. I'm not saying Hunter Green's as good as Shane McClanahan, but it would be a similar situation. And it's not that I'm projecting an injury for Hunter Green, because I think that's just a crazy thing to do, but he's already injured, so it's not projecting an injury. It's he is injured. It's elbow. I hate that. I'm selling.
Yeah, I think I am a little bit more concerned about the performance from Green going forward than you are. You're mostly focused on the injury risk, which I get. I think there's some performance regression that's coming as well. But I also I totally see the upside. I see where you're coming from, and I don't think he's going to be bad. I'm a little bit hesitant to buy in that, like, yep, he's found it, because there's a lot of underlying numbers this year that look a little iffy to me. He's got a teammate, though, that is also on this list. Rhett Lauder, 5.51 points per innings pitch in a very brief major league career so far, 15 and a third innings. Lauder's median salary is $2. Buy high or sell high?
Yeah, this, I mean, it's going to sound mean. He's only 22 years old and he could have a perfectly fine career, but I'm just selling high. You know, it kind of feels like with Andrew Painter's injury and the promotions of like Grayson Rodriguez and obviously Paul Skeens, that like saying that Rhett Lauder was this like top five pitching prospect doesn't carry as much weight as maybe it would have like a year ago. And I could be off base on that, but that's kind of what it feels like. And so far in the major leagues, he's walking a ton of people and he's not really striking people out and he pitches in Cincinnati and like I sell high.
I think I agree. My take is it's pretty similar. I think there's a lot of talent in Lauder. I think he could be very good. I think if you look at his minor league numbers, even the track record's not super long.
Mm-hmm.
The strikeout rate in his biggest chunk of time in Double A was not great. It was very good in, you know, High A in five starts, and his one six inning start in Triple A, it was very good. But it's, you know, under a strikeout per inning in Double A, which is, you know, his biggest chunk of time he's had. If I look across the minors, it's just sort of curious here. He has, let's see, 97, 106, 113 strikeouts. It's basically a strikeout per inning across the minors, which you expect to regress, which is why he's at 7 strikeouts per 9 in the majors, which is a little concerning. The walk rate in the majors is surprising because it hasn't been there in the minors.
Right.
But this strikes me as a guy who just like, he has stuff to work out. And so I think the challenge I see with him and the reason I think he is a sell high and not a buy high is I expect his value with this offseason to be, he's going to be in the rotation. He's already established himself. Look how good he was. And I think he's more like, he might be in the rotation. He might start in AAA. He might be the sixth guy. He might be the seventh guy. Maybe he's the fourth or fifth guy, but we don't know. And he's got some stuff to work out. Like the 0.59 ERA looks incredible, right? He's got a 5.04 Sierra. He's got a 4.46 XFIP. The FIP is good at 3.17, but the strikeout minus walk rate is 6.5, like is 6.5%. Like that's not good.
Right.
The underlying numbers here are a lot of walks, not very many strikeouts, and a zero home run per fly ball rate. Those are the big things I see. And it's not that I think he's bad. It's not that I think he'll never be good. I suspect his offseason value is going to look a lot more like breakout potential, you know, ace starting pitcher someday. He's not an ace yet, but he's a number three. And isn't that great? And I just don't think he's there yet.
And like, you know, we talked about organization when we were talking about Joey Cantillo. It's not that I think the Reds are some bad organization or something, but like Lodolo has really struggled. Ashcraft never panned out. I know there's somebody, Andrew Abbott is another one that like maybe not as much pedigree as Lauder, but hasn't really panned out. And Hunter Green, I feel like he almost has panned out despite that because his skills are so good. So I don't really trust the organization to build up a prospect if there was some hope there. So yeah, I'm selling on Lauder.
Yeah. Next guy on our list at 5.30 points per inning pitch, a $1 median salary. I don't think we have to spend any time on this guy, but River Ryan, he's having Tommy John surgery. He's not going to pitch next year. I will say this. I think he's a guy I will look to pick up at some point next year if he's on the 60 day and I can stash him and I've got the cap space to do it because I really like the talent. But like, I guess if you could trade him this offseason, trade him. I wouldn't be buying him. So I guess if I had to say sell high or buy high, I would say sell high. But he's just going to get cut everywhere because he's not going to pitch next year. And he's not in the McClanahan type tier where you have to go stash him. He's a guy that like, you know, mid to late next year, I'm going to be sort of intrigued at picking him up if I've got the space.
Great name, though. Great baseball name. I mean, that's just a dope name.
It's a great baseball name. Let's go to one of his teammates. We're going through some teammate runs here. Jack Flaherty, who also, by the way, has almost the exact same. So points per inning pitch for River Ryan this year. I said 5.30. It's 5.29552. Jack Flaherty, 5.29256. Incredibly similar lines. Flaherty's thrown a few more innings than Ryan. Flaherty, his median salary is $3. And I think this is a challenging one if I'm buying or selling on Flaherty.
Huh? Really? I'm buying on Jack Flaherty. I mean, obviously where he ends up is going to matter. And then there were the injury concerns at the trade deadline, but he's been healthy since then, I believe. And it was also the Yankees medical team that said this, which, like, does anybody trust the Yankees? They probably accidentally had up, like, I don't know, an old Masahiro Tanaka MRI and thought it was Jack Flaherty. So I don't know how much I trust that. It will be interesting to see here down the stretch. Flaherty has certainly had his issues over the last few years. I've always been a fan, though, and it just looked like it was coming back together this year. And when you look at the year collectively, his line looks great. I was actually shocked that he was around the same amount of points as River Ryan, not to discredit River Ryan.
Points per inning.
And your sample, I'm sure, comes into play there, but he's been terrific. 3.04 ERA, 184 strikeouts over 151 innings. So, and the whip is 1.05. He's been just a stud this year. He is a guy with a little bit of a track record, not always a good track record, but he's had a track record of success in the past. So combine all of that and the price of $3 or whatever, you know, location will matter where he ends up, but I'm buying Jack Flaherty.
Yeah. I think for me, what I'm seeing, or what's giving me a little bit of pause, is he, since late June, he's had some weird starts. He had a start when he was still with the Tigers at the Angels, where he gave up 5 runs in 5 2/3. Then he had a start against Cleveland where he didn't give up a lot of runs, but had 4 strikeouts and 2 walks in 6 innings. Then he had a good start. Then he had another good start. Then he had another good start. Then he gave up 4 runs in 5 2/3 to Pittsburgh. Then he gave up 3 runs in 5 innings at Milwaukee. Then he had a good start against Seattle. Then he had a slightly rocky start, but it was against Baltimore, so whatever. Good start against Arizona, good start against Cleveland, and then 4 runs and 5 hits and 4 walks in 3 innings against Atlanta yesterday. So there's just been some, like, ups and downs. Now, it is worth noting the overall performance over that stretch, right? I glossed over a bunch of good starts in there to point out the bad ones, is a 3.19 ERA, 3.97 FIP, 3.62 XFIP. He's still, like, the walk rate has crept up as the season's gone on, but he's still striking out more than 10 batters per 9 innings. Like, the overall picture looks good. I think the combination of injury history and history of not always great performance, and the fact that it's been a little rocky down the stretch, although again, the overall line is still excellent. I just had some questions, but I think at the end of the day, I come back to where you are. And I will be, I will be looking to pick him up this offseason. I think what I'll be trying to do is find the people who are like, think of him as found money, right? Like, okay, I didn't expect that. He pitched well. I can't bank on it again in the future. So I want to find the person who wants to sell high, but has enough of a nervous streak in them to give me a little bit of a cost savings. But I do think at the end of the day, if I had to pick, if I'm looking at my teams that have Flaherty and my teams that don't, and I have to decide if I'm going to go buy him for the teams that don't or sell him on the teams that do, I'd rather buy.
Sure.
Next guy on our list, Luis Gil, 5.10 points per inning pitched, $3 median salary. He's another guy who has faded a bit as the season's gone on. What are you doing with the Yankees ace, I guess, given what Cole has done?
Yeah, I think it makes total sense that he's faded here. Now, Luis Gil, was he a Tommy John guy? Is that what? Yeah.
Yeah, he did not pitch at all in 2023. He threw He pitched 4 innings in A ball in 2023. In 2022, he pitched 25 1/3 innings across AAA in the majors. And now this year he's at 135 so far.
Right. So, you know, it makes sense that he's faded a little bit, and he's always had, the reason why I've kind of bought into this breakout is because he's always had the crazy strikeout upside. Now, granted, that's been coupled with a lot of walks, which he's got to figure out. And, you know, as he navigates that and continues to grow, maybe that results in a little bit of a lower strikeout rate. But if that means he's walking less guys, I would take that trade off. He's always going to have good win potential. Not that it matters too much for what we're talking about now. But, you know, the underlying numbers kind of back up what he's done. He throws hard. He has managed this season. We'll see if it carries over to not get bit by home runs. He's, you know, he's under 0.9 home runs per nine innings, which bodes well for points leagues, as does the strikeouts. So I'm going to buy on Luis Gil. I understand hesitation, but I think he's a pretty solid buy at that price.
I'm selling. I'm going the other direction here.
Love to hear it. Screw him. What do you got?
Yeah, no. Here's the first thing I've got is a 4.64 walks per nine. And that's bad.
Okay, but you know that I love Edward Cabrera, so that's not going to faze me at all.
That's right. I don't love Edward Cabrera, so here we are. His overall season line is, you know, he's got the strikeouts, 10.35 strikeouts per nine, 4.64 walks per nine, 3.18 ERA, 3.82 FIP. All looks good. That line also includes a 237 BAPIP and a 0.86 home run per nine. Since June 9th, which is 66 and a third innings, it's almost exactly half his innings, and it's more than half of his starts. So we're talking almost the majority of his season, basically an even split of his season. The strikeouts are down under 10. They're still good at 9.63, but not as good. The walks are still almost there. They're almost up to 5 at 4.88. They're 4.64 for the season. It's not that different. The home run per nine is 1.22. The BAPIP is 286. And the ERA is 4.61 with a 4.70 FIP. Now, I totally get that some of that may be, all of that may be that he has faded. The fact that the strikeouts and walks haven't moved a ton, the exit velocity hasn't moved a ton, there's not a lot there that looks to me like he's faded as much as his home run per fly ball rate and his BAPIP have caught up with him. That's mostly what I see. Even if you take his overall season line BAPIP of that 237 and regress it negatively, or that that you still end up with an FIP around 3.82, right? It's a high 3 ERA. If you also regress that home run per fly ball rate to where it's been in the second half, you get an XFIP in the season of 4.25. And I think that sort of 4-ish ERA range is way closer to who he really is. And the downside is huge because of that walk rate and because of that park, right? He's got to suppress home runs at some rate to have the success he's had. And he's playing in a park where that isn't easy to do. So I'm selling Luis Gil. I'm actually not selling Luis Gil because I felt this way about him all along. And so I don't have Luis Gil. So maybe this is all moot, but I don't see it. I don't see it. He looks to me like a BAPIP mirage.
I hope you're right, honestly. Nothing against the kid. And I'm with you. I'm in 17 or 18 leagues. I have Luis Gil in none of them, which ultimately means I missed out this year, right? I mean, he's been good, but I'm not going to push back on that. The walks are an issue. He has not addressed them. I do like the strikeout upside, but I don't like the Yankees, so I'm fine with that. Let's sell him.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have to move a little bit faster because we've gotten through like less than half our list in more than half our show. So when we come back, we'll get going again. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here going through 21 pitchers, maybe. We'll see if we get to all 21 who have broken out this year and looking at whether we would buy high or sell high in the offseason. We're forcing ourselves to bucket them as one or the other. There's no like, oh, I would hold, you know, we're going to put something on the line here.
No fence sitting.
Yeah. No fence sitting. So we're going from a guy who you would, I'm sure, love to see fail just because he's a Yankee to a guy that you have a well-known affection for, Tanner Houck. After years of Pete telling us he was going to be good, Tanner Houck was good. 4.95 points per inning pitch. Median salary is $3. Another guy who's faded a little bit. I actually, in my CBS head-to-head league, we have this new rule that you can remove a guy from your active roster, replace him, but keep them as a keeper for next year, as long as you continue to hold their salary against them. And I did that with Houck in the playoffs because I didn't feel like I could start him. He also he was coming up against like the Yankees and Orioles in his next few starts. It was just one of those, like, he's got two bad starts in a row. He hasn't been good, but I didn't want to cut him. I wanted to sit on him for next year. So you buying high or selling high in Tanner Houck?
I mean, at the price, well, I'm going to say buy high because I think he's safe, but I'm going to explain why I'm not the same guy on Tanner Houck as I was before. When I was excited about Tanner Houck and Red Sox fans were excited about Tanner Houck, he's a guy who threw mid-90s with a wipeout slider, and the combination just looked absolutely devastating. And in a short sample, when he first got called up and then in between injuries, he really looked like a potential ace. I mean, he just did. We're talking like a 30% strikeout rate. And again, good velocity, not elite velocity, but very good velocity with a wipeout slider. And then, you know, he went back and forth from the bullpen to starting. He started to have some walk issues and we lost him. And I didn't lose faith. I kept the faith, but I guess I've been rewarded for that kind of, because he's a different pitcher now. The Red Sox have taken a different approach. So he's not throwing as many fastballs. He's throwing a sweeper now, which has been pretty good. It's a good pitch for him. It allows him to go deep into games because he's not going for strikeouts. He's not throwing outside the zone as much. And so I think he's a pretty solid, you know, middle of the rotation piece. But Tanner Houck no longer, in my opinion, as long as this is the pitcher he is now, has that ace upside that I thought he had. He's going to be 29 years old. He just, for the first time, threw over 150 innings. He's at 169. Let's see how the arm holds up next year. And I think that explains why he's kind of faded. But with this approach, there's not a lot of strikeout upside, and I think that really limits him. So I love Tanner Houck. I'm glad he's on the Red Sox, but I'm not the same guy on him as I was before.
So is that a buy high or a sell high at the end
of the day? It's a buy high at the price because I think he's safe, whereas some of these other guys are like, woof. The floor is pretty low. I actually think Houck's floor is kind of safe. It's just not that exciting of a profile anymore.
I'm with you. I think that the floor is pretty safe. I also think he is another guy who, like, for him, so the difference with him and Heel for me is Houck does look like he has just lost steam as the season's gone on, right? He is not throwing the same way. He's not striking out guys at the same level. Like, he just looks like he's out of gas. It's not just BABIP correction. It is a home run per fly ball rate that's doubled, but it's doubled from where I would expect it to be, to double what it should be. So I'm a little bit more, I'm more optimistic on him. And I think that he's, because he doesn't walk every other batter he faces, he's a lot safer than Heel. And so to me, that's
what I thought you were going to say was he's improved with the new approach. Thanks to Andrew Bailey, it looks like he's really improved. I mean, he improved the walk rate quite a bit the last couple of years, but now it's at an all-time low for him, which is obviously huge.
Next guy on our list is Spencer Schwellenbach. Schwellenbach, $3 median salary, 4.95 points per innings pitched. I'm going to be super quick on this. I've been buying him already. He's been a primary target. He was a primary target of mine through trade season where I was focused on next year, and I'm not stopping anytime soon.
Yep. Yeah. He's a buy high. He looks awesome. I wanted to look up the swing strike rate now, 'cause I know he's coming off a pair of bad starts or one really bad start. I can't remember, but the overall line, especially considering what we were looking for. And again, this is a trust. The swing strike rate is 14%. I mean, come on. But what I was going to say is there's another trust the organization. The Braves just churn these guys out, and it looks like Schwellenbach is their next significant piece.
Yeah. Next guy on our list, DJ Hertz. He is at 4.75 points per inning pitch, $2 median salary. A different org, an org that has had some pitching success, but not to Atlanta's level recently. I've been out on Hertz for the most part. I picked him up at one point and then like cut him again when he had a bad start. Like, he's one of these guys like, oh, I'll stream him. 3.70 ERA, 3.75 FIP, 28.7% strikeout rate, 8.8% walk rate, a little higher than you'd like, but a big improvement on where he's been in the minors, which I guess is good, although it does cause me some anxiety that could get a lot worse. You buying high or selling high?
I'm buying high. I would like to see him pitch deeper into outings, but everything kind of looks good. There is the walk issue. That's not good. I mean, 8.8% isn't necessarily going to crush you, but it's definitely not great. Everything else looks pretty good though. So I'm buying high on DJ Hers.
Yeah, I think for me, the performance this year looks like too much of an outlier from his minor league track record. The walk rate is literally half of what it was in AAA this year. And, you know, 5% lower than it was in AA last year. A little over 5% lower than it was in AA the year. 5% lower than it was in AA last year. 12% lower than it was in AA the year before that. I don't know. I don't like guys who walk everybody, and he looks like a guy who's getting away with not walking everybody, and I don't buy it. I think that as more major league hitters see him, they're going to realize more and more that you can just take your base. And it's not that I think he's necessarily, yeah. And I also think because of that walk rate, I just don't think the upside is as high. And sure. So I'm willing to sell high, because if I'm wrong and that walk rate doesn't come back to bite him, I don't think I'm going to regret moving him. So that's where I am on Hurts. Next on our list is a more expensive pitcher, $18 Shota Imanaga, 4.62 points per innings pitch. It shocked me when I saw how low that was, because he was so good to start the year. He settled in to be a little bit of a different pitcher than that, though.
He has, the league adjusted. Now he's going to have to adjust back. Even still, with all that said, he wasn't supposed to be a huge strikeout guy, at least from what I remember. And his swinging strike rate is 14.5%, which is an awesome, awesome number. He's got the innings pitched this year up to 160, so I don't really see any issues there. And I bring up the swinging strike rate because you might look at the strikeouts per nine, just 8.93. That's obviously a low number, but he's been pretty good. Home runs crept up a little bit. He's averaging a home run and a half every nine innings. But overall, the complete picture, he's been awesome, right? I mean, he's rookie of the year candidate, at least in the National League. So,
underlying Jackson stuff. Merrill and Paul Skeens are probably
Skeens is definitely ahead of him. Him, and Merrill got really hot. But I mean, like that's what a year in the National League for rookies. So I'm buying Imanaga at $18. I think he's safe.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he has struggled a bit down the stretch, but you know, a major league season is a different beast than an NPB season. And we've seen that from other pitchers who come over. I think that I've long been a believer that the time to buy into imports from Japan and Korea and places like that is the second year, because it takes some adjusting. And I'm hopeful that Imanaga is going to actually find maybe not another gear versus what he did at the beginning of the season, but another gear versus what he's doing now. Right. If I look at this as like the league adjusted and he's adjusting back, I think that there's some upside. But, you know, the second half of the season, like since mid June, he's been not very good. And so I get the concerns, but I think he's a buy. I'm with you. Next on our list is Ronel Blanco. He of the early season no hitter and then immediately followed it with a near no hitter. 4.62 points per innings pitched, $3 median salary. I haven't been super high on Blanco. I'm going to guess that the strikeout rate doesn't super excite you, but I'm curious what you actually have to say.
Yeah, he's been interesting. He's obviously good at hit prevention. He, you know, was flirting with no hitters, it felt like, for an entire month. So I don't think there's nothing there. I think it says something that Houston was ready to bounce him from the rotation. And I'm not so sure that was purely, you know, him reaching this number of innings pitched that he hasn't touched before. So that's a smart organization putting the brakes on someone. But what's the average price again? It's got to be like a buck.
It is three.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm selling high. 31 years old. I'm going to sell high there.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Astros are getting ready for a postseason run and decided he wasn't important to it. that is telling. The underlying numbers, like his ERA estimators, are all not great. The projections aren't great. I'm not a big believer in hit prevention. We've talked about that, you know, with some of the earlier guys in this list, that inducing soft contact is hard to repeat. So yeah, I'm with you. Sell high. His teammate. We keep running into teammates. It's very interesting. Hunter Brown, 4.61 points per innings pitched, $7 median salary. I think I'm buying Hunter Brown, but I need to look again. Yeah. What about you?
No, I'm definitely going to buy Hunter Brown. What a crazy up and down journey this has been since Hunter Brown got called up to the major leagues, because, you know, months ago, back when he got off to that just inexcusable start that ruined rotations early in the season, you know, we were pretty much out on him. And obviously he has turned that around and actually put forward a pretty fantastic season. The whip is still ugly, but he's striking a lot of guys out, mid threes ERA, still just 26 years old. I'm definitely going to buy on Hunter Brown. Yeah.
Since May 28th, he has a 2.28 ERA, a 2.86 FIP, 3.14 XFIP. He's striking out 9.73 per nine. He's only walking 2.51 per nine. He's brought the home run per fly ball rate down a little bit in that stretch, but it's still like 8.9% is not, oh my God, that's going to regress horribly low. It's just low. BABIP is 295 over that stretch, so it's not super concerning. He's still getting ground balls. I like everything. So yeah, to me, he's a buy. Next on our list, now that we have both bought Hunter Brown, Jared Jones, 4.57 points per inning pitched, $3 median salary. Are you buying or selling Jared Jones?
Yeah, I'll buy. The skills are great. We saw this in spring training. A lot of people started to gain interest, and he lived up to that. You know, right before the injury, things were trailing down or trending down, and then he came back, and it wasn't all that great. But when you still look at the season as a whole, 108 innings pitched, 115 strikeouts, 1.11 whip, I think it's hard to not just be excited going forward for Jared Jones. So I'm going to still buy the skills, and I'm definitely buying high on him.
Here's my crazy hope for Jared Jones is that in his last two, three, whatever it is, starts of the year, he pitches poorly so that I can buy less high. Because, yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, the innings are up there. He had the injury, which clearly was impacting him before he hit the IL, and then he came back a little rusty. His last start, though, was, you know, against the Nats, but 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, no walks, 2 runs on 4 hits. That's an easy one for me. Sometimes I'm watching their last few starts, be like, oh, are they gonna, you know, turn things around? Whatever. No, I want to see him pitch poorly so that people try to sell him to me. Brandon Pfaadt, 4.52 points per inning pitch, $6 median salary. What are we doing with Brandon Pfaadt?
Man, how much better would those numbers look if we just didn't count last night's outing? Brandon Pfaadt is too homer prone in this format for me, so I am out on Brandon Pfaadt. But he has shown this year, I think, that he belongs, which is awesome. Because last year I was worried if he was even a major league pitcher, but I can't do it. I'm selling high.
Yeah, I think the strikeouts aren't super high. The homers are a little bit of a concern. I think there's some upside overall because the BABIP should come down. He does avoid walks. Like there's some good stuff to like there. I just think I don't think he has ace upside. I think he's solid rotation fodder. Mm-hmm. And I would rather be selling that than buying it. I say that also thinking that if people are down on him, he's the kind of guy I could end up buying this offseason because I think he'll give you safe innings. But I don't know. I'd rather sell than buy if get forced into a choice.
Me too.
4.45 points per inning pitched, $3 median salary, Brady Singer. Singer was at one point a super highly touted prospect. Not like Paul Skeens highly touted, but highly touted. And then had some, you know, had a very good 2022 season and then was bad again last year. And now is he just sort of back?
What does back mean?
he looks a lot like he did 2 years ago, right? Those 2 years, 3.23 ERA 2 years ago, 3.42 this year, 3.58 FIP, 3.68 this year, 3.30 XFIP, 3.40 Sierra this year. Those are 3.60, 3.85. The strikeouts in that sort of mid eights range, the walks, you know, 2.5-ish now. They were closer to 2 a couple years ago. There's just a lot of similarities in the results in 2022 and 2023, or 2022 and 2024. Whereas in 2023, the walks crept up higher, the strikeouts crept down lower.
Yeah.
Gave up a lot more hard contact.
I don't think it's a hard profile to find, so I'm not going to like pay for it. I don't think there's much more upside than what you got this year. So if you're projecting your team going forward and you want to say, you know, there's a 80% likelihood that Brady Singer repeats 2024, then okay, he's probably, you know, definitely a keep, I guess, at that point. But I'd rather sell high.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think I like Singer for what he is, but I agree with you. If somebody's like, oh yeah, this guy's, you know, a top tier pitcher or whatever, like, yeah, sell. He's an innings eater for me, and that's it. Andrew Haney, $1. He's at 4.43 points per innings pitched. We have seen this story from Andrew Haney before, and it's always been a good decision to sell high on him. I don't think that's changed now.
Has not changed. Going to be 34 years old. It's nice to see him have some more success. It's definitely been, you know, not his best season ever, but a good season. I'm selling high.
Yeah. Nick Lodolo, $8 median salary, 4.42 points per innings pitched. That was a lot better before things sort of went sideways for him, and then he ended up on the IL with a finger issue. I am sort of torn because we're having this like buy high, sell high conversation about breakout pitchers. And I kind of think Lodolo is a buy low in a weird way because his end of the season has been so ugly. And I think a lot of it was the finger injury. It had apparently been bothering him for a while. He tried to pitch through it. It didn't work. And if you look at what he was doing, you know, his first 10 starts of the year, 12 starts of the year, something like that, 11, it looks like, he was excellent. So I think he's a buy for me.
Yeah, he's a weird one where if you just look at the numbers, it's an obvious sell, but context matters. And there are starts where if you're watching Nick Lodolo, he looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball. And with him being so young, so much upside, he's not a come out of nowhere guy who's a pretty highly rated prospect. I'm willing to give him another year. And I wouldn't want to risk losing a potential ace for just $8. So I think you just bite the bullet.
Yeah, I think that's right. And this is going to be interesting because it's going to lead us to the next guy who is a $5 median salary, 4.38 points per inning pitched in his debut. Kumar Rocker, you know, obviously like a super high draft pick, had the injury issues, Mets didn't sign him, went back into the draft, has dealt with those injury issues. You know, someone asked the other day, like, how bad do the Mets feel about this? I'm like, not at all. They thought he would need Tommy John surgery. They were right. And then they, you know, they got a replacement pick for him the next year, like whatever. But he has looked brilliant in AAA, looked good in his debut. Buy high or sell high?
Yeah, I'm definitely buying high. You know, not to say I was ahead of the curve, but I got him a dollar for the Podcasters League about a month and a half ago. but no, I'm going to buy high on Kumar Rocker. Love the frame. 6'5", 245 pounds. Like you said, was tearing up AAA, has all this pedigree. I mean, you know, he went to the Mets at whatever pick it was, 7 or whatever, had Tommy John, and then went higher in the draft. Maybe a lower quality draft. Sure, that matters here. But he went with the 3rd overall pick. So clearly, MLB scouts love the guy. And it just looks like it's all coming together. So I'm going to buy on Kumar Rocker.
I wanted to say buy, and I'm going to be contrarian and say sell. And here's my rationale for it. He still has not thrown very many innings. It's been years since he's thrown more than, 30 innings or something, 40 innings.
Sure.
So there's a lot of risk there. I think there is I think people are assuming right now that he has arrived, and I'm not sure that's true. Because I'm not sure the Rangers think he's throwing 130, 140, 150 innings next year, which means they're either going to slow play him or they're going to have to shut him down at some point, or we're going to end up in like a Tanner Houck, Luis Gil conversation at this point next year where we're like, why did he fade? You know, not that he's in their category. He's a different class of pitcher, but I do think there's a good chance you find yourself with him and you're like, you hit your fantasy playoffs and he's not available because he's hurt, not available because the Rangers have shut him down, or pitching very poorly because he's just out of gas. And I think if you can sell him as an ace who has arrived, and I think you will be able to do that, I would rather sell him as an ace who's arrived than buy him as an ace who's arrived.
Would I rather way to look at it.
Yeah. This is a good situation, by the way, where like if I have him on my roster and I do, I'm not shopping him. I'm very happy to keep him. But the concept of the show is I have to go one way or the other. And I would rather pay, I would rather get what I expect the value to be for him this offseason than pay that value to put him on my roster.
Yeah. That's a totally fair way to look at it.
Yeah. And that's coming from someone who thinks 2 years from now, you're going to really want him. I just think it's going to be, I just don't think he's, I think there's still some growing pains coming. That's all.
Sure.
All right. We did it. We got through 21 names. As I look at this, Skeens, we both bought high. Actually, maybe I can, one moment. I'm going to try something here. Ah, that wasn't what I was supposed to do. Okay. We are both buy highs on Skeens, Crochet, Flaherty, Hauk, Schwellenbach, Imanaga. Hold on. I'm going to make this slightly easier myself. Skeens, Crochet, Flaherty, Hauk, Schwellenbach, Imanaga, Brown, Jones, and Lodolo. You are a sell high on Yamamoto. I am a buy high. You are a buy high on Heel, Hertz, Rocker. I'm a sell high on all three of those guys. And then we are both sell highs on Beto, Green, Lauder, Blanco, Fott, Singer, and Haney. And I gave us an NA for River Ryan because he's just a different story. So pretty good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Some good debates in there, some good disagreements, some good alignment where it needed to be. So hopefully everyone enjoyed listening to that. It was useful. Like I said, even if you're not in auto new leagues, we were using auto new scoring just to sort of level set. But I think my answers to those questions don't really change if you're in a 5x5 or something like that. So hopefully this was useful for everyone. And yeah, we'll be back with you next week.